The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drives so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid. Wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Pick Six podcast. Will Brinson is at a hair plugs convention, is my understanding. That is where you go to get all the latest new technology and hair plugs. I'm sure he'll give us the whole lowdown when he gets back. But since he's not here, that means you have me, John Breach, hosting the show today. What a win-win. You tune in on Monday. You didn't even know you were going to get me, and you get me. And we have a great show because we are going to be joined by our good buddy Brian DiArdo and talking about some NFL history. I know we've talked about some of the best quarterback seasons of all time. Today, we have the 10 best running back seasons of all time. DiArdo, welcome to the show, man. We don't chat a lot, you know? I see you in Slack and we type to each other. We don't actually talk to each other very much.
We don't, and we have a very unique dynamic because we both like AFC North. Well, we both come from a background with AFC North teams that now I think can be considered a rivalry. But unlike a lot of years, unfortunately for me, your team has the upper hand. We're talking Steelers and Bengals. So, you know, I've appreciated your condolences after Bengal blowouts the last couple of seasons. Hopefully I won't be getting those messages in the future. But yeah, man, it's good to be on the show with you for sure.
And not just my team, also your wife's team, right? I know you've mentioned that. She's a Bengals fan.
Yes, and we actually are expecting our first in January. And, breaking news here on the show. And it will be a Bengal fan. It will be a Bengal fan. I lost that one, but she said I could have the hockey. So I'm stuck with that.
Well, congratulations on that. That's going to change your life. As someone with a two-year-old living in my house right now, I can tell you that everything is going to change, but for the better. It is all amazing, and I'm glad that you and your wife made the right decision about how to raise this kid, because let's be honest, Joe Burrow, the Bengals have been good for a long time, and the kid will have a happy upbringing, unlike any Bengals fans born in the 90s.
Well, that's kind of my thoughts, honestly. If it's going to be a Bengal fan, this is the time to do it because, you know, and it was very, really cool for me to go through the experience with my wife during last year's playoffs and kind of experience the highs with her and get her perspective of it. I mean, I might not make some friends in Pittsburgh for saying this, but I was invested in that. And and when that flag came on Logan Wilson, I didn't really speak for about 5 minutes. I was pretty upset. So I felt it. I felt it for sure. And, it's my only thing is this, and I tell my brother-in-law's, her brothers this, they can cheer for the Bengals, but they don't need to hate the Steelers. That's kind of my line I'm drawing. They can cheer for the Bengals. They don't have to hate dad's team. But no, I'm excited for Bengal fans. And I don't have to tell you that. I think the future is really bright in Cincinnati for sure.
Yeah, I would love to help you there, but I'm not sure those things are mutually exclusive, DiArdo. I think right. You might just be stuck there. All right, let's get to your list. Now, before we get to your top 10 list, I'm going to go over two snubs real quick that I wanted to bring up. Mm-hmm. And obviously, you can tell me why they didn't make the cut. Number one, Derrick Henry's 2020 season. We all know that. Obviously, finished with 2,027 rushing yards. And my argument for that one, and again, we'll go over the whole list, and I think one argument that people don't do often enough is that if you think someone got snubbed, that means you have to be able to pull something off the list. You can't just say this person got snubbed and and not, you know, say where they should have been. And I'll mention that when we get later in this top 10. But I just thought that we're in a pass happy era in the NFL. We've only had two players cross the 2000 yard mark since 2010. And Derrick Henry's obviously one of them. So why'd you snub my boy Derrick Henry? I'm in Nashville. He's in Nashville. What's going on, Diardo?
What's going on is he had his two biggest games of the season against Houston's run defense that was 32nd in the league that year. He had 19 catches. And you know, I'm a guy that, you know, if you're going to be in the top 10, I'm not. And again, I understand where he gets most of his yards. He's not used as a receiver, but you got to have more than 19 catches to be in the top 10. And for me, I was a big finisher. How did you finish your season? Well, he had 40 yards rushing in their playoff game and they lost. So those are the factors in. You know, you asked me, you know, I feel like a Derrick Henry hater. I'm absolutely not. I'm a huge Derrick Henry fan. And, you know, this was a great season. I wanted it to make the list. But for those reasons I gave you, I just felt like, you know, he had to be left on the cutting room floor.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. You know, if you got a lot of his rushing yards, and it's hard to crack against the Texans, like you said, and it's hard to crack the top 10. This is the top 10 best rushing seasons right. of all time. And the other one, I don't even know if it's a snub, but I think it's interesting that we have Jamal Lewis, the third most rushing yards in NFL history in a single season, probably the most improbable rushing season of all time in the sense that no one saw this coming, came out of nowhere. His career was spectacularly average, and somehow he has this 2,066 yard rushing season in 2003. Did you have any thoughts of putting that on or any reason you left it off?
Henry was above that season. And again, I feel like I don't want to hate on Henry. I like, you know, we are in the pass heavy league. I love what you just said. So for 2000 yard back in today's times is really impressive. But for me, it was the same thing with Jamal Lewis. Of his 2,066 yards, exactly 500 were against one team, the Cleveland Browns. As AFC North brethren, we know what bad Browns teams look like. And so, you know, for me, and I remember watching that season as it unfolded, and I remember watching Lewis trample over Browns defenders that season. But to me, it was like, that's just too big of a weakness for me when a fourth of your yards came against one team that had a lousy run defense.
Yeah, I mean, you could actually even throw the Bengals in there because they weren't great. That was the tail end of their 90s tailspin. That was Marvin Lewis's first year, and he had 281 yards total against them. So he had 781 yards of his 2,066 against two teams. So
right.
I buy that. But one of those games against the Browns, we can say the Browns have a bad defense, but one of those games was that 295-yard game that still stands as the second highest single game rushing total in NFL history. And, you know, just because you're going against easy rushing defense doesn't mean you're going to blow up with huge numbers. Because still, you know, we've only seen one person top that number ever in the history of the NFL. But yeah, definitely good points. All right, BDA, let's do this, man. Let's get to the top 10. We're going to start. You know, you didn't have Derrick Henry on the list, but you do have another Titans running back, and that is Chris Johnson and his 2009 season. Tell us why this one made the list.
You know what really blew my mind when I went back and revisited this list? You could argue this season should be higher. He had 500 receiving yards this season. He had over 2,500 all-purpose. That might be the highest of any running back on this list. You know, 2,000 yards, obviously, he's a member of the 2,000-yard club, averaged 5.6 yards per carry, 100 straight 100-yard games to end the season. He did this with Vince Young as his quarterback, and Vince Young was actually a Pro Bowler. This was actually a fascinating season to go back and visit. To me, the biggest thing, along with the all-purpose yards, is this guy was 5'11", 195. I mean, he's kind of considered a great scat back, right? I think scat backs, a lot of times we like to tend to think of them as not, you know, like a Dave Meggett, a complimentary back to a starter, but like he's easily the smallest running back on this list. Why is not higher? You know, he had 228 rushing yards against the Jaguars. That was his season high. Jaguars run defense wasn't that great. He started the season slow. Like I said, he finished the year with 100 straight 100-yard games, and the, you know, the Titans went 8-8, you know, so it wasn't like his performance, you know, led them to a playoff appearance. You know, I do look at those things. You know, they probably were 8-8. They probably were 5-11 without him. You know, he probably got them to 8-8. But largely, I mean, this season is mostly kind of forgotten, I think, of the 2,000-yard seasons. It hasn't really aged well. And yeah, he did a lot of his damage again. I tend to knock backs who did a lot of their work against defenses that weren't great, Jaguars. But he did have two big games against Houston, who was 10th in the league in run defense that year. So, you know, all in all, it was a great season. You could argue it was higher, but I like where it is at 10. And as we just saw with Henry and Lewis, it at least made the list. So I don't feel really guilty about leaving it where it is.
Yeah, and I do think it's interesting. You mentioned his 2,509 yards from scrimmage. Okay. That's actually the NFL record for yards from scrimmage. But you mentioned all-purpose yards, which includes kickoff returns and punt returns. And I think it's like the fifth highest for all-purpose. But as far as yards from scrimmage, just receiving and rushing yards, it is the NFL record. And so in that sense, if you just look at the numbers, you probably, like you said, could make an argument that it deserves to be higher. But you know what? I'm fine with it at 10 because – the Titans started 0-6 in 2009. They were lucky to get to 8-8. He had 128 yards in a 59-0 loss to the Patriots. Should that even count for anything? Should you even get credit for any rushing yards you get in a 59-0 loss? Because by the second half, you're just trying to soil that game away and get out of there. That was the snow game where Tom Brady threw like 45 touchdown passes in the first half. And so they definitely got off to a slow start. And then he kind of took off after that game. But yeah, I mean, that team wasn't very good, especially at the beginning of the season. I like it. All right. Number 9, we are going to Earl Campbell's 1979 season. DiArdo, why is that number 9?
Well, 1,934 yards is pretty impressive. 13 touchdowns. I'm looking at the 1980 season, actually, which was also actually threatened to make the list. But when you look at what he did that year, he had 4 200-yard games, incredibly impressive. You know, the biggest thing with Earl Campbell was, I mean, the 200 yards might be an all-time record, but I think the biggest thing was he had 4 200-yard games that season, which is that to me just kind of knocked it out of the park. As you can see on your screen, good games against, the Steelers and whatnot, but, really didn't have, he had kind of a point in the middle of the year where he wasn't, terribly impressive. His playoff performance that year wasn't great. So that's why it's not higher. And again, the issue, he was that era as, Derrick Henry, where he was a north-south back, wasn't going to catch a lot of passes. But again, if you're going to make a top 10 list, if you want to be higher than where you are, you've got to have some versatility. And so for me, that was the big knock on him, was that he didn't have the 200-yard game or the receptions, but he has the 200-yard games. He has the 1,900 rushing yards. He did it against really good competition. And at that time, I think it was the most rushing yards, second to O.J. Simpson in league history. So, and, he carried Houston into the playoffs. So for me, all those things added up to him making the list.
Yeah, absolutely. The Oilers went 11-5 that year. They went all the way to the AFC Championship before they lost to your Steelers and what I'm sure was a very sad loss for the Oilers, who never made it to a Super Bowl while they were playing in Houston. Now, I will say, you did mention the 1980 season. And so I'm going to mention real quick that you did in your story explain the rules to this list. And it was that each player could only be on the list once. So, could we put a top 10 ranking where Barry Sanders, 4 of his years are all in the top 10, maybe, but a player could only have one season on this list. So they could only be listed once. Earl Campbell had a pretty spectacular 1980 season that you were talking about. So 1979, 1,697 rushing yards with 19 rushing touchdowns, which is insane for that era. And then 1980, he bounces back and tops that rushing total, 1,934 yards, but only 13 touchdowns. So why did you go with 1979 over 1980?
No, actually, we might need to be reaching out to Kevin Stein, who's on vacation. I think that's supposed to say 1980. So that's what's going on there. or whoever edited the story, Brett Anderson, maybe I'll go in and republish it myself. But no, that's actually, and that's where, even when I made my notes, when you said 79, I'm thinking, so maybe in my head, I subconsciously initially picked 79 and then changed it to 80, and we never actually went into the article and fixed it. So we're having an editorial meeting on the Pick 6 podcast, but that's where the confusion, I think, was. So I picked 1980. 1980 is the season I picked. So if you go into 1980, He had 1,934 yards. He had 13 touchdowns. And that's why I picked 80 over 79, is because Earl Campbell, you know, like I said, he almost had 2,000 rushing yards. But, you know, to me that season, he had 203 yards against the Vikings in week 16. The main reason why I didn't have it higher was he didn't have two against the Steelers in 1980. He didn't have two great games. He had about 4 yards per carry average, which we all know 4 yards per carry is pretty decent. But for, you know, for his season average, it was 5.2. That was a little low. And then in the playoffs, he only had 91 yards rushing in a playoff loss to the Raiders. So I'm going to have to read my articles a little bit better. But yeah, it was the 1980 season actually over 79. But my big thing is John, you know, when I look at this, my rankings, I really, again, my big focus is how they finished the season. Did they finish strong? Did they really leave an emphasis or an exclamation point on the year? When we get closer to the top 10, to the top five specifically, you'll start to see that. But, you know, he didn't have a great game in the playoffs. He didn't have a great game against the Steelers, who was the best rushing defense he faced during the season.
Well, the funny thing is that, I mean, we literally, you could sit here and debate which one of those it should be. And you know, I just mentioned his numbers for 1979 versus 1980. I mean, you're saying 1980 is the number on your list with the 1,934 rushing yards. But, you know, let's not forget that his MVP season came in 1979. And a big reason for that was because of kind of his unprecedented scoring with the 19 touchdowns. So it's kind of what factor do you like, the scoring, or do you like that he's producing more often with almost 300 more rushing yards in 1980? And, you know, you mentioned the playoffs playing a factor in it in 1980. They got knocked out in the wild card round versus 79, where they made it all the way to the AFC title game. So I do think either one of those seasons, what if the editors were just like, what? I was alive then. It's 1979. That was the better season. Diardo's wrong. It's not 1980. We need to get like seven more people on this podcast and debate which Earl Campbell season was better. You know what? There's not going to be any debate with our next ranking because at number eight, this person's best season was 2012. No one is going to argue over that. And that is Adrian Peterson, who won the MVP over Peyton Manning in 2012. And tell us why he's number eight on the list, Diardo.
Yeah, I mean, this is still the second most prolific rushing season of all time. And also had 40 catches. And again, it's always, you know, we always talk about with running backs, particularly back then. Now we're in the age of we look at all purpose, right? Like, look at Alvin Kamara, never had a 1,000-yard rushing season, but we don't even really worry about that anymore. He's a Pro Bowler every year because of what he does as a receiver and a catcher. So it's kind of cool to look back at these lists and see, you know what, Adrian Peterson did catch the ball. You know, a lot of us don't really remember him as a pass catcher in his prime, but he was. And this season is a testament to that. You know, he had 10 100-yard games. He really finished the year on a tear, as you can see if you're watching on the screen. I think he averaged 141 yards a game his last 10 games. I mean, the 6 yards per carry is pretty bonkers. I mean, and that's another thing. I mean, Emmitt Smith's 95 season was a notable exclusion on the list as well. That's actually the honorable mention on this list, not even Derrick Henry's 2020 season. But the thing with Emmitt was his yards per carry was under 5. Nobody on this list has a yards per carry of under 5. So, and a couple have 6, including Adrian Peterson. And again, finished the season on a tear, you know, 199 yards against the Packers in week 17 to clinch a playoff spot for the Vikings that year, who really wasn't a very strong team. You know, why he's not higher? He had a slow start to the year, only 100-yard game his first 6 outings. And in the playoffs against the Packers in the rematch, he was good but not great, you know, held to under 100 yards. Still had a good game, but nothing really to write home about. And again, you would think you'd hear more about this season, John. It's the second most prolific rushing season ever, but you really don't, which is kind of surprising. And again, you know, there wasn't a big crescendo of playoff success or anything like that. So I think for me, definitely deserved to make the list, but it falls a little bit short of making it higher on the list.
Yeah, and this definitely feels like a season where Adrian Peterson absolutely carried the Vikings. I mean, obviously, we're not talking about 1979 here. We have memories of this 2012 season. The Vikings quarterback was Christian Ponder. Look, you take Adrian Peterson off that team, this team probably goes 6-10. You put Adrian Peterson on this team, and it was a completely different, it was playoff caliber. That's what they did. They went 10-6. I remember that season finale. He needed like 100 yards to hit 2,000 for the whole entire season. And it was against the Packers. It was week 16, week 17, whatever it was the last game of the season. And he ends up going for 199, which not only got 2,000, but as you said, gave him the second highest single season total in NFL history behind only Eric Dickerson, who we will talk about a little bit later. So I thought this was a very fascinating year. And the weird thing about Adrian Peterson is that he's been good for so long. It's that you kind of forget that watching the way his, ever since his controversy, his suspension, that everything's kind of, he just hasn't been as good really. I think he suspended in 2014. He had a good season in 2015, but really since then, it's kind of gone downhill. But Adrian Peterson from 2007 to 2013 was just one of the most unstoppable running backs in the NFL.
Yeah, and I think you could argue that he's the best running back of this millennium. I don't think that's a debate, right? I think that's something that most people would generally agree. And you know, you could argue Frank Gore possibly. I mean, Frank Gore, maybe he's had a better career in terms of got to a Super Bowl and you know, higher up on the career rushing list. But, you know, it's almost like Jack Nicklaus and Tiger Woods, you know, where Tiger's more AP and Gore is Nicklaus. I don't know if that golf metaphor was good. As Will could attest to, I'm kind of still getting in. I'm getting into golf now, so I'm really kind of dialed into what's going on. But yeah, I would argue that you know, AP is the best. Right. But again, like we've discussed, his game hasn't really aged very well in today's NFL, where you have, look at Najee Harris. Najee Harris comes into the league when AP did. He's used as AP. But now Najee Harris is catching all these passes because he's playing in today's NFL. So, you know, maybe that's why people have kind of already started to forget about him, was that he was our father's running back, not this generation's running back.
And Diardo, let me say that Brinson would have absolutely loved your golf metaphor. I don't do the golf metaphors. I didn't even get it. I zoned out as soon as you started talking about golf. No, I'm kidding.
That's all
I got
good. All good here.
All right. So what do we got next? We have at number 7, Old Sweetness, Walter Payton and his 1977 season. Now this is Walter Payton. You think of all obviously played for a long time, 13 seasons. And you think of all the big years he had. This one is unequivocally his best year, as far as running the ball. And that was finishing with 1,852 rushing yards, 14 touchdowns. Also had two receiving touchdowns. And the craziest part of this season is that this was a 14-game season. And so he finished with one of the, I think, top three or top four highest yards per game totals in NFL history, with an average of 132.3 yards per game. So Walter Payton, why is he at 7?
So he's at 7 because, as you said, I mean, 1852, and this was actually the NFL's final 14-game season. So, you know, and I think this was third all-time at the time for yards rushing in a season behind Jim, you know, a couple guys we'll talk about later. You know, 5.46 yards per carry average, 1,000-yard games, two 200-yard games. I look at 200-yard games a lot, too. I mean, that's the reason why, you know, Campbell's 80 made it over 79 is the four 200-yard games and the extra rushing yards. I mean, and again, nobody on this list ran for fewer than 1,800 yards. And that's another reason why Emmitt's 95 season did not make the cut, even though it was a deserving season in some regards. But, you know, and he had, you know, Walter had the flu game when he went for 275 against the Vikings. That at the time was the highest rushing total in league history. I think it was until your boy Corey Dillon broke it.
Stood for 23 years. That was 275. Dillon ran for 278 against the Broncos in 2000. And just real quick, Payton. So that stood for 23 years. And it's still, as of today, the fifth highest single game total of all time.
Right. And he had a 101 degree temperature in that game. And this just shows you again. And one of the reasons why Walter makes it is, I mean, I think Joe Avellini or Bob Avellini was their starting quarterback at the time. And they made the playoffs. I mean, of the Bears 366 yards in that game, Walter accounted for 281 of them and they won. I mean, really before, you know, Mike Ditka got there and the offense and Jim McMahon and stuff. I mean, the offense was, well, the Bears were Walter Payton. We weren't alive to obviously remember that, but I mean, the Bears are Walter Payton. Why he's not higher? As you can see, his season didn't really end with a bang. 47 yards against the Giants team, that wasn't that great. In the playoffs, 60 yards on 19 carries. Again, they played the eventual Super Bowl champion Cowboys with a historically great defense. So I'm not going to really put that on him too much. But if you're going to make it higher on the list, then I need to see more at the end of the season. But again, I mean, as we talked about, two 1,000-yard seasons didn't make this list. So to make this list, you had to have an all-time epic year. And I think Walter's year is deserving. But and there really weren't any numbers that really jumped off the page. He had, you know, 17 total touchdowns, a very nice number. But just if you're going to be in top five category, there really can't be any flaws in your resume.
And mentioning Bob Avellini, I think makes sense here because, look, the Bears, they went 9-5 that year. You mentioned they lost in the first round of the playoffs. Bob Avellini threw 7 more interceptions than touchdowns in 1977. He threw 11 touchdown passes, 18 interceptions. This offense was literally only going to go as far as Walter Payton was going to take it. And his numbers are why he won that MVP award in 1977, because people are staring at Bob Avellini. They're thinking every time this guy drops back the pass, he's going to throw an interception. And so if you're the Bears, you got to give the ball to Walter Payton. Everyone knew Walter Payton was going to get the ball, and still no one could do anything about it. So I like this at 7. It's a great season, but I don't think, you know, when we get to these top 6, which we're going to do right now, there's no spot for it. You can't really move it up. Especially you can't move it up to this number 6 spot because it's another MVP season. We mentioned Walter Payton's at number 7, 77's MVP, Adrian Peterson MVP in 2012. Our third straight MVP season here, LaDainian Tomlinson in 2006. Giardo, why is this at number 6?
I got a lot of heat on, well, for as much heat as a historical piece is going to get, you know, if you write a Tom Brady hit piece, you're going to get a lot of hits. But, you know, for this list, I got maybe 3 or 4 people like, why wasn't LT higher? So for me, that's pretty big. So here's the reason why. Again, great season, all-time season. No 200-yard games, you know, and I know he was used as a receiver and he was kind of this new age. You know, he was kind of the future of running backs. Really, this was 16 years ago, which is hard to believe, but he was kind of the wave of these kind of backs. 1,000-yard game. Again, this is nitpicky stuff, but if you want to be top 5, again, there really can't be any flaws in what you're bringing to the table. So, and, you know, his greatness didn't register in any playoff wins. I mean, they lost to the Patriots, and that was a season where the Chargers were better. I mean, they went 14-2 in the regular season. You know, Philip Rivers at that point was kind of becoming that Hall of Fame quarterback. He had a great game, you know, 123, you know, rushing yards, 2 touchdowns, 64 yards receiving in that loss to New England. But late in that game, didn't really do anything to really put a stake in the Patriots. They had the lead. They lost the lead. You know, I feel terrible kind of condemning somebody for losing to Tom Brady because everybody on earth has, including the Patriots who Brady played for. But, you know, just the way the season ended, you know, that was the big thing to me. But yeah, I mean, other than that, all-time great season, right? 1,800 rushing yards, 508 receiving yards. You know, his 31 total touchdowns is still the NFL record, league MVP. And, you know, this is really, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, I think at this point, fantasy football was really skyrocketing in popularity. And LT's popularity was huge because of all the points that he gave the fantasy owners.
Yeah, and they were destroying. If you had LT on your team, you were destroying everyone. And that season, he finished with 2,323 yards from scrimmage, which is the 8th most of all time. We talked about earlier how Chris Johnson's season number 10 is the most of all time at 2,509, except that the Titans started 0-6 and struggled to an 8-8 record. So it's hard to say that Johnson's season was all that valuable. Whereas you have Tomlinson here at 2,323 yards. And you know what? Tomlinson actually had a better all-around season, not as far as scoring in 2003 because he had over 700 receiving yards. But I don't think anyone would ever put that atop this MVP season because not only do you have over 500 receiving yards, as you mentioned, over 1,800 rushing yards, but the 31 total touchdowns is insane. I mean, that is just a bonkers number.
Do you know what's crazy about that 2003 season, John? He had 100 catches. He did not make the Pro Bowl.
That is crazy.
That's why he didn't make the list. Like I actually looked at that 2003 season and I'm like, I can't put a guy on a list that doesn't make the Pro Bowl. Like that's kind of odd to me. I mean, most of these guys made the MVP that season. This was obviously LT's MVP season. I didn't make it a point where you have to be an MVP. There were a few benchmarks that I kind of wanted you to clear, but I mean, the fact that now we'd have to go back and look, but I mean, I know that Priest Holmes made the Pro Bowl that year. I don't remember all the other running backs. I mean, back then the league was littered with great running backs, but Marshall Faulk at that point was in his prime. But man, the fact, and that was also the year that Jamal Lewis ran for 2,066 was in 03. So, you know, Edgerrin James was in the league. So obviously, but yeah, didn't make the Pro Bowl that year, despite having 100 receptions and all the rushing yards he had.
Yeah, that always stinks when you have a career year, one of your best years, when everybody else also chooses to have one of their best years, and that kind of leaves you hanging. And you know what's funny is there was one particular game as a Bengals fan that I remember about that 2006 season, and I remember this vividly. This was it was right before Thanksgiving in 2006. And, you know, 2005 season, that was the Bengals' first playoff berth since 1990. It had been a long time. You're finally thinking, oh, my gosh, this team is good. They can play with the best teams. They're playing a Chargers team that, like you said, you know, they finished 14-2 as the top seed in the AFC. And the Chargers go into Cincinnati, and the Bengals take a 21-0 lead. And I remember thinking, oh, my God, the Bengals are actually good. They can they're stomping down on the best team in the league. And then that 21-0 lead somehow turned into a 49-41 loss. Yes. So that is my random story. And LaDainian Tomlinson, what does he have to do with that? He scored four touchdowns.
And I'm sure I don't have to remind you of how that 06 Bengals season ended.
If you're talking about the slant into the end zone in overtime for a touchdown against the Steelers, no, you don't have to remind me.
And my roommate was a Bengal fan. Again, my entire life is surrounded by Bengal fans and how I choose to deal with that. And now I'm obviously choosing to join the dark side.
After you were many years just waiting to bring that up. You're like, I see your notes. As soon as we talk about the 2006 Tomlinson season, I hope Breach brings up the Bengals so I can rub that season-ending loss in his face.
I actually, to this day, and maybe this is for another podcast that I don't know what target audience want to listen to, AFC North, just shooting the stuff, but I don't know what happened to the Bengals in 06, because I think they lost to the Colts late in the year, and that kind of started the downward spiral, because Carson had a great season that year, and they were coming off the wild card performance the year before. I thought that was kind of when they were going to take off. I know this is not the running back list, maybe for another time, but yeah, I mean, didn't mean to do that, John, but it was kind of thrown my way, and I had to take it. So
yeah, and so for anyone that does not know the details of that game, the Bengals lost to the Steelers on New Year's Eve. I was at the game in overtime. Where if the Bengals would have won, they would have gone to 9-7. I think they would have made the playoffs. And instead, yeah, so they win that game. They're in the playoffs, and instead, Ben Roethlisberger hit Santonio Holmes with a 67-yard touchdown pass. It wasn't a bomb. It was a slant that Holmes took to the house, and that was it. Steelers win. Steelers and Bengals both go 8-8 that season. And yeah, I don't even.
Bill Cowher's final game. That was Bill Cowher's final game.
You know, in that case, good for Bill. I'm happy about it. The Bengals weren't going to win the Super Bowl that year, or whatever.
Yeah.
At least Bill got to go out with a win. All right. You know what? That's good. We're going to take a break and we're going to recalibrate. And remember, this is not an AFC North podcast. It's a best running back season. So let's take a break real quick.
The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
Robert Half Research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
All right. Welcome back. You know what? If you're coming back, you're back here for the top 5 seasons of all time. Top 5 rushing seasons of all time in NFL history. We already had Chris Johnson, number 10, Earl Campbell, number 9, Adrian Peterson at 8, Walter Payton at 7, LaDainian Tomlinson at 6. Now we're to number 5. And number 5 is, I believe, Were they handing out MVPs? Nope, it's not MVP season. I know Jim Brown won a bunch of MVPs, but this is not one of his MVP seasons. This is his 1963 season with the Cleveland Browns. He rushed for over 1,800 yards, which seems like an insane number for 1963. Diardo, why is this the number five game, number five season on your top 10 rushing list?
Well, I believe at the time it was the most rushing yards by a running back ever, 1863. Did it in 14 games, 900-yard games, two 200-yard games. One of those games, 232 yards, two touchdowns against Tom Landry's Cowboys, averaged 12 yards per carry in that game. Not too shabby. 12 touchdowns. And also, you know, he didn't catch a bunch of passes, but 24, 268 yards, three touchdowns. To me, really, it's the three touchdown catches. So it wasn't like, you know, he, you know, wasn't used at all. So over 2,100 all purpose, you know, and really, I mean, if you're, you know, 60 plus, which, you know, my dad, actually, the Steelers were so bad in the 60s. He had Steelers season tickets. They went to games to see who to watch the opponents, really, to watch the Colts come in with Johnny Unitas, to watch the Browns come in with Jim Brown. And to this day, he says that Jim Brown's the greatest running back that's ever lived. So I really wanted Emmitt to have a spot on this list. But again, none of his seasons really hit the bar. I'm glad that there was a Jim Brown season that hit the bar. You know, why it's not higher, again, I like to look at how you're finishing. And as you can see, you know, that second to last game of the year, they lose. He has 61 yards on 13 carries. Again, not a terrible day, but not a sensational day. And back then, you know, only two teams in each division made the playoffs, and the playoffs was the championship. And because of that loss, they miss out on playing for the championship. Now, a year later, the Browns get their title with Jim Brown. Then he retires and rides off into the sunset. But, you know, for that reason, it wasn't higher, but this season has everything else that you'd want.
Yeah, it's weird because Jim Brown did win, as mentioned, multiple MVPs. Pro Football Reference has him down for 1957, 1958, 1965. But it does feel like this was his best season. I mean, he averaged 133.1 yards per game, which was the highest number of his career. So he was just kind of running over everyone. And you mentioned those 200-yard games, which are just, you know, those were rare early on in the NFL. And for him to have multiple 200-yard games is just something that's impressive. So Jim Brown, and he did finish second in the MVP voting in 1963 behind Y.A. Tittle. Diardo, you know history. I didn't have to tell you that. I'm telling the listeners that. I knew Diardo knew that.
I actually wasn't sure. I had to think for a minute there. I had to think for a second. I think there was probably a historical story written at some point, and it banged me in the head. But I don't remember what day to take out the trash. So, you know, I got to work on life skills here, John. But, you know, yeah. But last great year for Y.A. Tittle, though. But
we all do. We all need to work on the life skills, Brian. So yeah, we got 1963, great season. You know what's crazy? He led the NFL in yards per game in every season he played except for one.
Yeah,
I think that's right. Maybe that sounds right. That, I mean, that's just unbelievable.
Well, yeah, and it kind of makes you wonder, is he the greatest running back of all time? So when I was in college, I used to work in a shoe shine room. Those things exist, and there was an older guy.
In 1960?
Yeah. Yep. And I sold newspapers for a nickel outside of the barber shop as well. So, you know, there was an older guy. It was his retirement job. His name was Rick Hancock. If you're out there listening, Rick, and we used to debate, because shining shoes isn't rocket science, we used to debate forever who was the greatest running back ever. And we'd throw out Walter Payton and Barry Sanders and Emmitt Smith. And he always just said, guys, it's Jim Brown. You had to be there to see it. And I feel like for us, in our generation, you know, that's probably us defending Michael Jordan. You remember when Michael Jordan played against all the guys that are playing now, like LeBron James. But, you know, it's unfortunate that I feel like we can appreciate history, but I feel like unless you were alive and you saw it in real time, you just can't appreciate greatness. And that's why I'm really afraid of 2070, when I'm the only person alive still talking about the 70 Steelers, and I'm going to be told to give it a rest. So, you know, but yeah, I just think that Jim Brown, I don't know if he's the greatest running back of all time, but I do know he was a man among boys. He was the Babe Ruth of running backs when he played. And he certainly, you know, set the standard for future running backs that followed him.
Yes. And whenever you're on the podcast with me, we also do not want to be talking about the Steelers.
Fair enough.
Just to be clear, keep our Steelers talk to a minimum. Which makes me happy because the next person on this list is not a Steelers player, but that's about the only thing that makes me happy about the next person on this list. Jim Brown led the NFL in 8 out of 9 seasons. He played 9 years and he led the NFL in yards per game in 8 of those 9 seasons. All right, let's get to number 4, always a controversial name on any list, but when you're just talking pure football, you can't leave him off, and that is O.J. Simpson, the 1973 NFL MVP. I'm going to keep my O.J. words to a minimum and just give the floor to you, Diardo.
Yeah, and I'll try to do the same. I honestly, because of his life, kind of tried to not put him on the list, but you know, he's the first 2,000-yard running back, and he did it in 14 games. He averaged 6 yards a carry, and he was pretty much that team. I mean, they were, you know, they were a team that gave the ball to O.J. Simpson a lot, and he delivered. And he's not higher, you know, outside, you know, if you're just talking on the field, he's not higher because he only had 6 catches that season. So this was a guy that got the ball and ran with it a lot. Really didn't do much else, but, you know, he had 1,100-yard games, 3 200-yard games. In a 2-game stretch late in the year, he had 419 yards on 56 carries, a 7.5 yards per carry average. You know, closed out the year with a big performance against the Jets to get the record. You know, that season's just too strong not to be on the list. I don't know if I already mentioned it or not, but you know, when you see a 6 next to a yards per carry in a 2000, you have to include it. So yeah, I mean, as much as I tried, you know, I had to, you know, he's not higher, but you know, he kind of set that template that a back could get 2,000 yards. And, you know, the NFL had a 14-game season or a 12-game season for a long time, and there's only one 2,000-yard running back during that stretch of time, and that's him. So, yeah.
Yeah, and that absolutely bears worth repeating. In 14 games, O.J. ran for more than 2,000 yards. He hit the 2,000-yard mark in 14 games. I mean, that doesn't even seem possible. But the Bills did not make the playoffs that season. Even though O.J. won the MVP, they missed out by 1 game. They went 9-5 and they needed to go 10-4. You know what two teams went 10-4 and got playoff berths? The Bengals and Steelers.
That's true. You said it, not me. Just for the record, you said that, not me. And I think both teams, maybe, but no. Who the Steelers that year lost to the Raiders, and maybe you guys lost to the Dolphins, maybe?
Yeah, that sounds right. The Steelers got smoked by the Raiders, and the Bengals got smoked by the Dolphins, and then the Raiders got smoked by the Dolphins, and then the Dolphins. That was the repeat year after their undefeated season. They went 12-2 and won it all. You know, I will ask one quick OJ question about football. Mm-hmm. Did you think about the 75 season? Because when we look at and obviously he won MVP in 73, but in 75, he almost doubled his touchdown total. He had 23 total touchdowns. He only had 12 in 73. I know you mentioned his lack of receiving skills in 73 with only 6 catches. He had 7 touchdown catches in 1975. Actually, pretty impressive. And finished with 1,817 yards. So he had 200 fewer yards, but 11 more touchdowns, and was kind of more of a receiving threat in 75. So did you consider that one at all? Or was it just, you know what, he won MVP in 73. This was when he was at his best.
Yeah, I'll admit, John, I didn't even consider this season. So I give you a lot of credit for kind of forcing me to kind of look at the season with a tighter lens. And yeah, I mean, 7 receiving touchdowns is kind of news to me. He had a 100-yard receiving game against the Dolphins that year, which they still had that stout defense. And one thing I did know about his 75 season was his only playoff game ever, he rushed for under 50 yards in 74 against the Black and Gold, being cute here. And then week 2 of that season against the Black and Gold, ran for 227. And that team, that Pitt team, won the Super Bowl that year. So maybe I should have given a tighter look, but I feel like if you have to include OJ season, I almost feel like it would be sacrilegious isn't the right word, but I feel like it would be incredibly odd to not go with his 73 season. Albeit though, I agree. I think 75 is his most complete season ever, but not his best season. Maybe.
But 2,000 yards in 14 games is an accomplishment that speaks for itself. There's a reason no other player did it in NFL history. So that's not to say that the 75 season should be in over 73. Because when you think of OJ, you just think of the 2,000-yard season in 14 games. But the fact that he does have two games or two seasons that were that close, that were that transcendent for a running back. He finished second in the MVP voting in 1975. Do you know who you finished behind that year?
75 league MVP? Oh, you're going to get me. You know, I'm throwing out a guess. Random guess. Was it Fran Tarkenton?
It was Fran Tarkenton. You just know your old school quarterbacks too well. You can't even stump Diarda. It's not even. With Wilson and Brinson. Brinson, we guess four times, get it wrong, start Googling, pretend like he's not Googling, and then wait 4 seconds and then say, was it Fran Tarkenton? And then I'd be like, okay, you got it. But we
my
both
technology's not good enough. So even if I tried to cheat, I would get exposed. So, you know, but no, I knew. I mean, yeah, that OJ season, as you said, here's one thing. I'm just looking at that season now that you forced me to admit that I probably maybe committed a faux pas. I should have at least considered this. He had at least one touchdown in every game that year.
That's insane.
He was in the end zone every game. And the one game he didn't, I think he had a rushing touchdown in every game but one. And in that game, he caught a touchdown. That, I mean, obviously off the field, he's not a great guy. Take it lightly. But the dude, and I think he's a little bit overrated in terms of running backs because he didn't have the longevity. But the dude in his prime, I mean, NFL Films called him the player of the decade, which is an unofficial title. But for the first 5 years of the 70s or from 72 to 75, there might not be a better running back ever for 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. And he was playing on a Bills team that, quite frankly, wasn't very good while he was there. It was kind of like, another person we'll get to on the list being stuck on a bad team. And as you noted, OJ only played in one playoff game in his entire career. As good as he was, only got to the postseason one time. The next person on this list did not get to the postseason one time. He got to the postseason multiple times because he won multiple Super Bowls. And that is Terrell Davis. He had several good seasons, but definitely one great season. I don't think anyone will debate the Terrell Davis season that belongs on this list. It's the one at number three, and it is the one in 1998. Why is this at number three, Diardo?
Well, this is really the season that you look at. Actually, if you want to talk comparing seasons, you could argue that his 97 season was more impressive. Now, the rushing yards were lower. He was under 1,800 in the regular season. But in the playoffs, had 184 against Jacksonville, 101 against a really tough Kansas City defense with Neil Smith and Derek Thomas and those guys, 139 against Pittsburgh, and in the Super Bowl against Green Bay, 157 and 3 touchdowns, despite having a migraine. That was TD's 97 season. 98 comes back off of that season, 2,008 yards, 21 rushing touchdowns, wins league MVP. In the playoffs, goes from 199 against a Dolphins team that held him to 129 during the regular season, 167, and this is the theme now for the rest of the way. Great running backs face Parcells Belichick coach teams since they, you know, in the 80s and 90s were pretty much in, you know, Parcells was the head coach and Parcells was the DC, or other way around. Parcells was the head coach and Belichick was the DC for many of those years. So TD runs for 167 against that team. And the Super Bowl runs for 102 against the Falcons defense that was geared to stop him, yet still goes for 102. It was really the decoy that allowed Elway to win MVP honors in his final game. His 2,476 yards that season is still the league record regular season and playoffs. Derrick Henry in 19 had a chance to potentially chase that down. But the biggest thing to me was, along with everything I just said about TD's 98 season, he sat out the equivalent of two games during the regular season because the Broncos had such huge, they were a dominant team that season. And a lot of fourth quarters, he was on the bench watching the action. So that's why week 16 or week 17, despite him dealing with a rib injury, they made him go for 2,000 because they were like, you sacrificed all these games sitting here and watching. I think they took for granted that he would get 2,000 because he had 1,000 after 7 games. But then he kept sitting in fourth quarters. And then the Dolphins game happened where he only gains 29. And then it became, you know, now he might not get it. And the Broncos all kind of decided that it was important for him to get that and to get a win because they were 13-0, then lost 2 games. So I think they kind of also wanted to get their mojo back before the playoffs. But I mean, this season has everything. I mean, if he had his Super Bowl 32 performance this season, this might be number one. Like this would be number one if the 97 playoffs is in the 98 season, but it's not. Number three is still pretty good.
And the other thing, you know, you mentioned how productive he was in the 1998 postseason when they played Atlanta in the Super Bowl. And one thing there is that, you know, a lot of people forget, nobody forgets that he had a huge postseason that year, but a lot of people might forget that he literally carried them to the playoffs. John Elway was horrible in the divisional round, in the conference title round. Obviously, he had a great Super Bowl. That's why he won MVP, threw over 300 yards. But when you look at the rounds before that, he didn't throw for more than 185 yards in either the divisional round or the conference title round. So Elway, he only completed 13 of 34 passes against the Jets in the AFC title game that year. 38% of your passes. If your quarterback is only completing 38% of his passes in the conference title game, you're supposed to lose by like four touchdowns. But the Broncos did not, because Terrell Davis came through with 167 rushing yards and a touchdown in that game. And in that opening playoff game against the Dolphins, 199 and two touchdowns. He rushed for more yardage than Elway threw for in that divisional round playoff game. So that was, you know, the Broncos probably don't repeat as champions if he does not play as well as he did in those two games. All right. Yeah, that's pretty solid explanation from you for why he's number three. Now we're into the top two, and this is going to get juicy. I think this is going to get juicy here, because the number one single season rushing record belongs to one Eric Dickerson, and he is not number one on this list. He rushed for 2,105 yards, NFL record, in 1984. And although that is the NFL record, that is only ranked as the second best season ever by a running back, DiArdo. Why is Eric Dickerson at number two on this list?
And John, as we've made clear here, we are on different sides of the aisle as it relates to our football loyalty. So you won't hurt my feelings if you think I made a mistake here. So you can hear me out first and then let me know if you agree or disagree, and you won't hurt my feelings that much. So, yeah, I mean, and also, I love making this list. You know, the quarterback one was fun to make. We might have more coming down the pike here this summer, as there's nothing to talk about right now. But this one was a lot of fun, because I didn't just want to do, okay, well, we're going to go the top 10 rushing seasons ever in that. I mean, to me, I wanted to have a couple 2000, you know, years not make the list. I wanted to mix it up. And it would have been very easy to put Eric Dickerson number one just because of what you said, 2105, which is still the standard. So, you know, I'll talk about all the good things he did that season first. 2105, still the record. 12 100-yard games. Two 200-yard games. 215 versus Houston late in the year to get the record. You know, those are all the great things he did. Coming off the year, he ran for over 1,800 yards as a rookie. I mean, those two seasons combined, I think, along with TD's 97-98 campaigns, are the best. I mean, it's the best 2 years to start a career ever, and it might be the two best consecutive rushing seasons ever, regardless of where they were in their career. Why it's not higher? 14 touchdowns really isn't much to write home about. 21 catches isn't much to write home about. And then the wild card loss to Bill Belichick and Bill Parcells' New York Giants. The first playoff win for either coach in the NFL ever. He ran for 107 yards and a touchdown, which is good. It's not bad, but they lost a one possession game where he potentially could have done more. It's very similar to LT's season in 06, where he didn't play bad in the playoffs, but they needed a Herculean effort or an epic effort to win, and he didn't. So to me, the end of Dickerson's season left a little to be desired, not to mention his last game of the regular season, he didn't have a 100-yard game, and 14 touchdowns is a little low. These are all nitpicky things, but if you want to be number one, your slate has to be almost immaculate, and you can argue it's number one, but I like where it is at two, and I think the guy ahead of him had a little bit better of a season.
Yeah, I do think that absolutely Dickerson, it's fair to put him at two. You know, it's not like he's at eight on this list. And obviously you get the eye popping numbers with the 2,105 rushing yards, the NFL single season record. But as you said, you know, you lose in the playoffs. And you know, what's crazy, you mentioned this to the start of his career, his rookie year and his second year, is that you could almost argue that his 1983 season could be the year on this list. Obviously, the rushing yardage wasn't anywhere as close, 1,808 yards. So he's almost 300 fewer rushing yards, but he had almost 300 more receiving yards. And he scored 20 touchdowns in 1983 compared to just 14 in 1984. So that's the crazy thing with Dickerson, is that he has two seasons that legitimately could be on this list, and one season that was arguably better than his NFL record-setting season. And also, you know, they won a playoff game in 1983, which they didn't do in 84. But, you know, you can't argue against 2,105 yards. And one other thing going for Dickerson is that it was kind of like we were talking about, the Bills had zero, OJ had zero quarterback help. Neither did Dickerson. I think Jeff Kemp was the quarterback who got most of the starts in 84. And that's telling you the running back is carrying the team. Eric Dickerson almost rushed for more yardage than the entire Rams team threw for in 1984. The Rams, they had three quarterbacks who threw at least one pass. They threw for 2,382 yards as a team. Dickerson rushed for 2,105. So just 280 yards behind the team's total passing number. So he was everything. I like this, and people can decide if they don't like it or like it, because we're going to reveal the number one right now. And that is none other than Barry Sanders. Every season Barry Sanders was on the football field was a good one, because no one could tackle him. He was untackleable. I don't know if untackleable is a word. It is a word now, and whenever you talk about Barry Sanders, it's a word. And DiArdo was going with the 1997 season, which I think was hands down the best one. He won MVP that year. DiArdo, why is Barry Sanders at the top of the list for the 10 best rushing seasons in NFL history?
So this is not, I mean, I have the tech, you know, the actual reasons in my hand here with, you know, my notes, but I want people, if they have Twitter, which most people have Twitter, go on and write in your search engine, Barry Sanders Bears 1997. You will see a video of him scoring three touchdowns. The announcers in that game were Pat Summerall and John Madden. And they said four words in that video, pretty much that's it. Four words, but the same word three times. Amazing and unbelievable. And John Madden was a Hall of Fame coach, and Pat Summerall played and announced for decades upon decades upon decades. They were dumbfounded watching Barry Sanders run the football, as anybody was that watched him play, not just that season, but any season. And he might be the best running back of all time. He's on any Mount Rushmore of greatest running backs of all time. He started that year with Bobby Ross as his new head coach. Wayne Fonts was fired. And Barry famously did not like having a fullback in front of him. So what does Coach Ross do? He puts a fullback in front of him and then watches Barry run for 53 yards in the Lions' first two games. They get rid of the fullback, and Barry runs for 2,000 in the last 14 games. So, you know, I know with OJ, you know, he ran for 2,003 in a 14-game season. Well, Barry ran for 2,000 in the final 14 games of 97. So Barry kind of did what OJ did, if you take away games, you know, weeks one and two. So he finishes the year with 1,400-yard games. That is still the record for most 100-yard games in a season. He had a couple of 200-yard games that season. 6.1 yards per carry average. I mean,
that's insane. That's bonkers.
2,358 all-purpose yards. As I said, two 200-yard games. He had one against the Buccaneers where they stymied him earlier in the season. He comes back and runs for, I think he had two monster, like, long touchdown runs in that game. And that's kind of when people were starting to wonder if Barry was done, because I think this was his age 30 season, if I'm not mistaken. It was either his age 29 or age, I mean, he retired after the next season, so this was kind of near the end, and kind of announced himself against a very good Buccaneers, and that was the Buccaneers' first really good team with Tony Dungy that kind of came onto the scene and had a couple Hall of Famers on that defense. 14 touchdowns. As I said, he did catch the ball that year. He had, you know, 33 catches, three touchdowns. There's obviously running backs with better receiving years, LT among them. But he did do things other than run the ball, and he willed the Lions to the playoffs that year. Just willed them. No running back's ever done, you know, more with less. When you talk about, you know, Dickerson, most of his yards was gained on a play called 47 gap. The lead blocker on 47 gap is Jackie Slater, who is maybe the greatest tackle ever. He's in the hall. Well, Anthony Munoz is. Had to save myself there, John. Anthony Munoz is. But Slater's on the Mount Rushmore of tackles, so you know, it wasn't, I mean, I know that the Lions had some good linemen. They had some good players, Herman Moore and whatnot, but Barry was really the engine of that team. No pun intended for Detroit engines, but you know, the only thing missing on this year would have been a great playoff performance, but given what he did in the regular season and what the Lions were, just making the playoffs was a huge year for them, an achievement. I didn't hold that against him. I think it's the greatest rushing season that we've ever seen.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned how prolific he was during the season. There were 5 games out of 16 where he averaged more than 8 yards per carry. Imagine a running back averaging 8 yards per carry. You give him the ball twice, you have a first down. You give him the ball on first down, it's 2nd and 2. That would be game-changing. So he did that 5 different times during the season. This wasn't just one game where he did that. He had a game against the Colts where he averaged 9 yards per carry. Barry Sanders just, yeah, if you, I can never get enough Barry Sanders highlights. Go to YouTube after you hit like on the Pick Six podcast. Google Barry Sanders runs, best Barry Sanders touchdowns, best Barry Sanders highlights, and you will just sit and be amazed. I would watch all 9 years worth of highlights. It might take you a few hours, a few days, a few weeks. But you know what? If you don't eat breakfast and you don't sleep and you have your food Uber Eats to your desk where you're watching all this, it will get done quickly. But definitely Barry Sanders, easily, like you said, on the Mount Rushmore of best NFL running backs ever. DiArdo, you are on the Mount Rushmore of people who make top 10 lists about seasons in NFL history. I don't even know who else would be on that Mount Rushmore.
That's
man.
What I was thinking, but you know.
You are absolutely there. I am glad we had this conversation. You know, I was going to make fun of Brinson one more time, but I felt like the hair plug conference, he won't bring me back any hair plugs, and I'm going to need them soon. You know, it's going to thin out eventually. So I want something back. I am glad everybody stuck around, listened to the top 10 list. If you have any problem with it, or if you loved it, tell DiArdo on Twitter. DiArdo, what's your Twitter handle?
At Brian DiArdo, very original, so you can find me there.
That's it. We copied off each other because I'm at John Breach. You know, you don't need to spice it up. The name works. The name works. All right. Thanks for stopping by, everyone. And we'll be back this week, but without Brinson. So you're getting guest hosts all week.
This is Tony Kornheiser's show. I'm Tony. You expected someone else? So what exactly is the show about? I don't know. It's a sports show nominally. Football's over, but we're finally at a point where things matter in college basketball, and baseball season is on deck. Greatest 3 words in the English language, pitchers and catchers. We have some of the best voices come on and explain what matters or what makes an upset, like Ryan does, 9-8. No, that's not an upset. No, yeah, it is, Bob. And if you're lucky, I might just tell you about my search for discounted sleep pants or my worries about what my dog just ate. Listen on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.